Check, 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 check. Yeah, 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 yeah. What up, y'all? X-Men 97 revisits the iconic era of the 1990s as the X-Men, a band of mutants who use their uncanny gifts to protect a world that hates and fears them, are challenged like never before, forced to face a dangerous and unexpected new future.
The X-Pod 97 will track those adventures weekly to you, your X-Pod.
Here we are. My name is Mega Ran. That's Marcos. And we are going to be talking to you weekly about this new series, X-Men 97, which I'm extremely hyped about. Got a chance to watch the first two episodes, and it's very, very, very good. I mean, I think they pretty much nailed it. I'm going to get into some details, of course, as we go. But man, I'm just really excited. It brings back the feels. It feels very nostalgic, but in a great way. We start remembering, it immediately picks up from where the original left off. But before we go forward, we got to go back. So, Marcos, what's your relationship to the original X-Men series?
Man, when it comes to X-Men, like, I remember when it first debuted, I want to say it was 94. At least in New York, it was 94 for me. Might be a little bit earlier than that. But I remember running home, you know, after the summer being full of all these commercials with the iconic music, like X-Men coming, X-Men coming. And then all of a sudden, I get home and I am immediately hooked. You know, we get introduced off the break to new characters. We get introduced to Jubilee. And it's like really cool. I'm a huge fan. I remember when they did the mid-season, like summer before you go into school, they had a primetime preview. You remember that? Like, it's a whole bunch of good times, man. Like,
it was a lot of hype behind it. So it debuted in 92, but I think the hype even began like as early as 1990 for this show. Like, they were talking about it. They did a sneak preview. And I do remember like getting so hyped for this show, which was originally scheduled to run for 65 episodes, but because it was so successful, they got 11 more episodes. So the original show was supposed to end at season 4. So they actually wrote an ending in, and then they had to go back, rewrite. And then when they got ordered to do more episodes, apparently a lot of their animators were busy with other projects. So the animation completely switched up by the end. Do you remember that time?
Yeah, I remember that they backpedaled on a lot of plot threads, and like the characters look weird. But you know, then again, there was a lot of shows during that time that things just randomly shaked up. You know, bringing in another Marvel show, Spider-Man, that they changed animators and producers halfway through the show, and like there was a noticeable difference. But I still rock with the show, you know, with all its imperfections, with everything, and even though how dated, but yet amazingly nostalgic that it is. You know what I mean? Like rewatching this in preparation for these episode drops, I was like, man, this is old. But I loved every second of it. Like, you know, like Jubilee arcades and everything, that whole thing was crazy.
Yeah, man, it's definitely the 90s. Like, I had to like stop myself from like complaining for a moment, being like, oh yeah, it's the 90s. So it's important to note that for me to catch up, I didn't have time to be going through 85 episodes. So I got to really shout out Screen Crush, who did this awesome 35-minute wrap up of the entire show. And it's so good. It's so on point. Screen Crush is always my favorite place to go to for stuff like this. You pick up really cool things. They treat it with a lot of love and care, and they caught me up perfectly. I can't even remember if I watched the show all the way up, because I don't recall Spider-Man joining. I don't remember any of that. Like, I think I had checked out by that time. I'm a little older than most, so I think I was into college and studying and girls and all kinds of other things. And so hip hop music. So a lot of this stuff didn't necessarily catch my interest anymore, but I've always come back and forth to it. So the same with comics, the same with wrestling, all these things that I loved. For moments, I've been lapsed on them, but I've always come back. And here we are.
Yeah, it's a great show. Yeah, they did a lot of wild stuff. Spider-Man, you know, they did a couple crossovers with other characters that you as a kid, you were like, who is this person? And then later on, as more animation came out, you were like, ah, that's my guy.
Yeah. All right. So there are currently two episodes out. They did a two episode premiere, which is interesting. I don't really know why they do these days. Do you have any insight on why they do the two episode premiere thing now?
This is just pure speculation and based on the actual research that I've done. The way the motto goes for, especially Disney Plus, they like to maintain viewership and membership. So it's typical for like the normal person that has a busy life, such as yourself, you know, as a traveling artist, that if they subscribe to a service, they will forget about it after a while. So instead of following the Netflix motto of releasing everything all at once, where you could do it, be like, all right, I'm done with this. Let me go ahead and end my account, and then I'll pick it up later on. What happens is when you stagger your release after 30 days, that means you got to at least keep these people hooked for a couple months. Now, this run is going through May, so that's 2 months of viewership. And then with the expansion of viewership, people will probably be, give good word of mouth and get more people to join. But this is more of a labor of love to set up the introduction of the X-Men in the MCU. Okay. So they're bringing back all that feels.
All right. And it all the feels came back from the moment I pressed play. I thought I was going to hear the dude say previously on X-Men, but they didn't do that. But what they did do is they brought back the original theme. And I
which was
like
hard
on the floor, dog. I was like, yes. Like, I thought they were going to try to flip it, you know, remix it, add some new stuff to it, bells and whistles.
You thought they were going to do hip hop?
Like, yo.
Like all of a sudden, pull a 21 Savage beat.
21. X-Men. Let's go.
But,
man, they brought it back exactly the way I remembered it. And I was so excited about that. Shout out to the composer of that theme, the legendary, and I mean super legendary, Ron Wasserman. Now, if that name sounds familiar to you, it's because this man also did the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers theme. This guy is a goat when it comes to theme songs. He's worked a ton with Saban on pretty much every Power Rangers, things like that. He almost moved around. He was about to do Dragon Ball Z, but a lot of other things started happening around that time. So anyway, shouts to this man because he's a goat. Now, let's get started. So this takes place a year after the results of the final episode.
It's kind of murky.
I think.
They're led to believe that it's a year, but before we talked about the getting together and potting, I believe it's about 6 months. And there's clues within the first episode because, unfortunately, as an adult, I've had to deal with death. So the death certificate comes within a month or two after you bury somebody for insurance purposes.
Yeah.
So they made it a point in terms of Scott's grieving to mention and show that death certificate. And on the death certificate, it's 11/11/96, which, if I'm correct, was the last air date of the last episode, which is pretty awesome.
That's good. They tied it back nicely. So calling it X-Men 97 means it definitely takes place in 97, which could have been 2 months later, could have been a whole year later. We don't know.
Yeah, I speculate because I always assumed like where the X-Mansion was like in Connecticut or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they were playing basketball. So I don't know if you live on the East Coast, Northeast, you're not wearing shorts in like February. You know what I mean?
I'd like, be thinking like they didn't think this far through this thing, but you never know. A lot of this stuff is very intentional when it comes to Marvel stuff. So yes, it could be spring. So let's just say if he died in November, let's just say we're in March. I don't know, or something. Yeah. But anyway, we're in the next year, calendar year. All right, there are some new changes I noticed even from the intro, and I don't know if you noticed, but our guy Morph actually gets an intro plate. He is on the team. Now, as you know from the previous X-Men iteration, Morph was in and out. He was a double agent. He was a triple agent. He was on this side. He died. He came back. He was on that side, came back over. Now, it seems because of this intro that he is fully on the team. Any thoughts on Morph? Now, Morph died in the original season, but was brought back because of fan demand and fan disappointment, because there's a lot of themes in this show that kids weren't ready for in the 90s.
Mainly death. I love that he came back, because originally, if you look back in the original episodes, he actually was the closest team member of Wolverine, because they came in around the same time. If you watch the show, Wolverine never really felt like he had a bond with anybody else, because if you dissect the team, you know, you had Scott, you had Jean Grey, they were a couple, you had Rogue, and you had Remy as her love interest, and then you had Beast, who literally his partner in life was science. And then you had Storm, who like had a bond with everybody, but in terms of a person that didn't feel like they belong, Morph was the closest to that.
So they kind of bonded in being the outcasts, kind of the loners of the crew.
Yep. That's why he took it so hard.
It makes sense, and it's good that he came back for that reason. Also, Bishop is added to the intro. He's a full-time team member. Straight out of the future. So Bishop's original point of even being in the show is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was a time traveler who lived in the future, and he came back because the future was bad, and it's always bad in X-Men. The future is terrible. In the future, in like the 2020s, like around this time, all the X-Men are dead. Life is bad. And he's like, yo, I want to go back and try to fix that. So he has this time band that allows him to go back and forth. Now, I don't know the story, but he is full time in the present day part of the X-Men, because they put him in the graphics, unless they're going to shoot a whole different graphic for every episode as people come in and out, which would be kind of cool, but it seems like a lot of extra effort.
Well, I think they're circling back on the thread that he was stuck there. They kind of never really talked about it, that his time traveling device, he came back to save, namely, I think it was Professor X or stop Professor X when he came back, and then he got stuck. And I love that they made it a point to say, hey, Beast is still working on this. He loves the technology, and he's kind of just waiting to go home. I don't think he's there full time. I think he's kind of just there waiting until Beast either discovers how that technology works, or he's able to get back. I honestly think that the fact that they showed that, because again, Marvel's very intentional, it's gonna come back to that later.
Interesting. All right. I do feel like you said, a lot of things are intentional, so we might see more of that. All right. So right now, this starts off with the X-Men saving a young kid, Roberto. Roberto's this rich, snooty kid who's trying to buy his way out of these situations, but he is a mutant. So as with the big bad appears to be in this show, the Friends of Humanity. Real MAGA vibes out of these guys.
This was
97. These happened back in the day. They had them in the show, but it's so funny how time has made this now fit in a whole different narrative. And I don't think that is lost in the writers, the directors, the producers of this show. They were like, oh, this is perfect. This is probably the main reason why X-Men 97 happened. They're like, yo, X-Men are minorities.
I agree somewhat. I think they backed themselves into like, oh man, look at this plot thread that we could pull out. But yeah, if you're a comic book reader, X-Men is rooted in the civil rights movement and the actual, you know, the divide that the country had back in the day and still kind of today, which is it's funny how everything comes full circle.
Full circle. You, way more than it was in the 90s. Like, yeah. You know, the 90s we had Rodney King, I guess. But yeah. Now, whole different. Yeah, so it's like full like, circle, man.
I had to pause and look at the insignia on their belts again. Because, like, for a split second.
It was like, yo.
Like, wait a minute. Like, I had to look at the logo and, like, bro, like, it was given vibes that it was like, oof.
So the Friends of Humanity are trying to cleanse the world of dirty mutants. And now, one very good line that is used in the beginning, I noticed when, before, you know, it all starts to go down, they start noticing that these guys have new technology.
Yep.
And they're like, hey, yo, you didn't think with mutants coming around that humans wouldn't evolve too? So then, dude from the Friends of Humanity pulls out the arm cannon.
Yo.
Looks very much like Mega Man. And I thought that was so hilarious. It got the little meter and it lights up and everything. Like, yo, they took their technology from 20XX and decided to consult Capcom for some technology tips. And Dr. Light now makes weaponry for the Friends of Humanity.
Honestly, immediately when I saw that, because we spoke about your cannon there a couple of days ago, I was like, oh my God. I immediately was like, yo, Rand should corner the market on this, repaint his, and be like, just start doing a freestyle. Yo,
start selling nothing. Now, and then now it's updated. Like, I always worry about kids not knowing who Mega Man is if I pull that out. They're going to be like, oh, you got the thing from X-Men.
It's like, are you a friend of humanity? No.
I might have to color it a different color or something. It had to be blue, too. Like, yo, they really legit just jacked Mega Man. Like, come on. I mean.
I hope they work something out with Capcom because, like, I can see the lawsuit. It'd be like, sir, ours is blue and red, theirs is blue and yellow,
right?
And our nozzle in the front is a little bit smaller, just a little bit.
I don't know if you noticed who Roberto is.
Yes, as far I was as about to story. Ask you.
We'll talk about who is Roberto.
Yeah. Well, Roberto, because they kept like bringing you along, it's revealed that his power is sun oriented. Mm-hmm. So if you realize the name Roberto and you kind of put it together with X-Men, he is Sunspot, which I think was the best way to bring him in. And he's young and you can use him later on to be the powerful X-Men ally that he becomes later on.
So that immediately, the fact they brought him in so soon makes me think like by the end of this, they're probably thinking franchises. Like, all right, what else can we do? Can we do X-Force? Can we do New Mutants? I feel like we'll get to those at some point, depending on the success of this, as you know how these universes go.
They're opening up like I honestly think that this is just the beginning because they cast a couple different people that have roles that haven't been announced yet. Mm-hmm. And if you go through, like, I like to troll through press releases and everything, production notes are out there. And if you look, there's a couple people that are on the list that haven't been announced who they are.
Like, yes, I just noticed that. I saw there's Jeff Bennett is an unnamed role who also does Johnny Bravo. Mm-hmm. Theo James. And is an undisclosed fan favorite character. They have not said who he is.
I got an exclusive here. I got an exclusive for you guys.
What you got?
I don't know. I don't know if you heard this anywhere else, but I was able to find documentation out there that confirms that Adrian Hugh, the OG voice of Nightcrawler, is coming back as Nightcrawler. I don't know when, but he is coming back and notes that he hasn't been seen since the Alps trip in 92. So it's been like 4 or 5 years since he's been seen.
Okay. All right. I think it's safe to assume that most of the characters who've appeared in the past are coming back. probably Colossus, some other folks. So that will be really fun to watch and see. All right, now back to this episode. Also, the Friends of Humanity have Sentinel technology. And yes. I thought that was interesting when they mentioned how you guys get Sentinel tech when, like, there hasn't been a Sentinel around for years. There's no facilities to make them. What is going on? And hopefully we'll figure that out at some point. But Joe, then right maybe 5 minutes into the show, we get the X-Men. It's much like, and I think this is intentional. I remember the original pilot and how they saved Jubilee and how it's like, all right, new kid gets introduced. She's in trouble. And now here comes, bam, somebody busts in with a great, you know, opening line. And I think it was Storm. Storm comes down. He's rocking a Storm shirt. Storm comes down. I'm goddess of the weather, and I demand you release this child. Yeah. Literally, I mean, almost word for word, she remixed what she said in the very first episode of the very first X-Men. And so this works so great into introducing and reintroducing us to these characters. They each come in. They each get a line. They get a quip, and then they get to show what they can do. Yeah. Cyclops comes in even looking badass, like, far from a gump, as we used to call him back in the day. Yeah. But he comes in looking super dope, handling business, pew, 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 actually shooting people.
Yep. So, giving hands. And makes a joke, which I think is like almost Daredevil-ish, not Daredevil, almost like a Deadpool-ish wink at the camera when they knock his visor off. And your man is like, oh no.
Oh no, I surrender.
And then he's like, nope.
Not. I was joking. Like, man, everybody comes in looking super dope. We get a really, really great introduction to the X-Men. They're handling business. Now, it's next time to figure out how these fools got Sentinel tech. So we need Jean. And so Jean is deciding to probe Gyrich's mind. Gyrich is the guy who actually...
If we rewind a little bit, Jean was not in the initial X-Men scene.
Ah, why not?
We later find out when they go back to the mansion, guess who walks into frame pregnant? Jean Grey.
Jean with child.
With child.
Now, if you know anything about X-Men, you probably know who that child is, but we'll get to that at some point. It's another time traveler, I'll say that, but we'll get there. All right, so now... Jean is not able to be out doing her thing, but she could still use the mind. So they bring her to Gyrich and they scan to find out where, Bolivar Trask. They need to find this guy. So Jean sees terrible things when she looks into this guy's mind. Terrible, terrible. As usual, the future is always bad. I think that's a very common theme in X-Men is that no matter how bad it is now, it gets much worse.
Yeah.
And so that seems to always happen. Next, we get to, when they find Trask, he is rebuilding Sentinels in an aid by Master Mold. I didn't know much about Master Mold. I don't know if you do, but.
Well, Master Mold was a supercomputer, the blueprint that they used to basically birth or create the other Sentinels. Mm-hmm. He's a computer that I assume was probably AI at some point and became this huge robot that runs the manufacturing of the other Sentinels. Okay. And basically, you know, as long as there's a copy or a Master Mold around, they can make more Sentinels whenever they feel like it.
Aha. Uh-huh. So he's the original that will be duplicated and copied.
Correct.
So, all right, now we got another fight. They get down. These machines are broken. They can't deal with the X-Men. They can't handle them. Next thing you know, Trask gets grabbed and he is going to trial. And then we get some very important conversation between Cyclops and Jean, where they discuss their future and how it involves the X-Men. So what do you think is happening here? They're talking about kind of falling back.
I think based on the plot thread that we've seen in the comic, I think it's a situation where they're seriously thinking that they're going to leave the team. But if they follow the stories that that they, I think that they're adapting. It's kind of like, I don't want to say a red herring, but it's kind of like they could go either way. That's all I can really say. You know, I'm not the OG comic guy. You know, I can't be like, if you look at book this, and I just know from my memory and from the research and, you know, the fandom that I have over the X-Men, this is something that truly, at least the way that they're following now, it doesn't come to pass. No. But it becomes a contention, like it becomes something that the team knows about. And again, I think they're planting seeds for something else.
All right. Well, that means you got to keep watching. So it really gets real by the end of this episode when, as the mutants are just chilling, playing basketball, hooping it up, someone is in Professor Xavier's office.
Yep, they triggered the alarm.
And who is it but, dun, 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 who is it?
Magneto, baby. Coming in looking all suave for no reason. My man got his hair coiffed.
Yo, and everything. Hair is just done. It's just looking amazing. He got his arms out. He's just like, yo, I'm here. And they're like, why are you here? And he's like, well, bam, I got the last will and testament. And it looks like your man gave all of this to me.
Yep.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then he says, including my X-Men. I was like, yo, my man came through.
He said the line. Like, nah, these are my X-Men. And I think that's so interesting. The title of this episode is To Me, My X-Men, which is like their rallying call. It's like the Avengers Assemble. And for many years, really the only person who's ever said this has been Professor X.
There's one point
in this episode where Cyclops says it, and I don't know if he really had the conviction behind it. He didn't really say it with his chest. But
I mean, it's the scene that we've seen in the commercial. It was super dope. And like he said it, it felt like he knew like that he had the power to do it. And everybody fell into line, including Wolverine, who kind of like
even pulled up. Yeah.
He didn't say anything. It's like the X-Men, I guess when they're not fighting, they bicker. But when they're getting down to business, they're like, nah, we fall in line, baby.
That's true. Yeah, Wolverine ain't there was no static. There was no hesitation. It was like, all right, let's go. That's what it is. So just based on that, I was like, oh, Cyclops ain't leaving. Like, you can't just leave the squad. Like, it just can't happen that way. But who knows? Now we find out the big cliffhanger is that Magneto is in charge. So they're going to get into this, of course, in the next episode, which we're going to talk about in our next episode. But really quickly, just overall, let's go 1 to 10, 10 being the highest. How do you rate episode 1 of X-Men 97?
If you ever heard me in another podcast or anywhere that I guess, guest host or whatever, I never say a 10 because I don't believe there's perfect media out there. So that being said, I'm going to give this a 9.5, leaning towards the 10. Because you know what I mean? Like, perfect is something, this was hit on every note. I just can't call anything perfect. But this was damn near close. And this is like, honestly, and I've watched a lot of animated shows. I've watched a lot of anime. There's very few that I rank high as this, but this was a perfect segue back. It was a perfect episode. It was strong and pulled on emotions. And the references that they gave, unless it was a cameo, like a morph thing, they had reasoning behind it. It wasn't like everything was sure-footed. And the one thing that we didn't talk about was, it's just the sprinkling of the ending with the outro and the original. If you watched it, the first year of X-Men, the kind of computer animated click on the card to see the X-Men power. That was dope.
That was dope, man. They really did everything. They plucked all the nostalgia bones perfectly. I felt like I was right back in the 90s. It felt like Saturday morning all over again. Like, I stayed up late to watch this. Like, they brought the feeling back, man. Like, I am not mad. I'm going to say 100% props to Jake Castorena, the director, Bo DiMaio, the writer, who apparently we got some news about, but we'll get to next episode. And I think they nailed it, man. Like, absolutely. I'm going to say 9. I'm not going to go into any points. I'm going to just give it a solid 9 and say, yeah. I mean, yes, you always have to leave room for improvement, I will say. But, man, this was legit.
And also, right.
We're going to stop here. I want to stop here because we're going to do another episode. And we're going to get into everything that we left out in this one and more. So I want to thank you for tuning in to X-Pod 97 episode 1. If you like it, you know what you got to do. 5-star it. Give it all the ratings, reviews, share with your friends. Let them know that there is a new X-Pod in town talking about 97 and bringing it back. So we'll see you very soon for episode 2, which is coming right at you in 2 and 2. I'm Mega Ran. That's Marcos. Oh, he's that way. That's right. Deuces.
Peace.